Oh my God. What happened to all the lights?
Sorry.
I can't see anything. Hang on. I think I have some matches in my bag. Okay, here's the lighter. That's better. What happened?
Oh, I don't know. I was plugging in the lights and... Oh, could you check the breakers outside the studio? I'm afraid if I move, the tree's gonna fall on me.
Okay, hang on then. Don't move. I'll check it out.
Thank you.
Okay, this way, Natalie.
Okay.
I have a confession to make. The lights are fine. I just had to find a way to get Sharon out of the studio for a minute so I could prepare the Christmas gifts. And I've got Natalie McLean here from Ottawa to help me do so. Natalie is a writer and sommelier that was named the world's best drink writer in 2003 by the World Food Media Awards in Australia. Hi, Natalie.
Hey, Rosie. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great, thanks.
So you have a new book, Red, White, and Drunk All Over, A Wine-Soaked Journey from Grape to Glass, published by Doubleday. And it's one of the 5 books that our lucky listeners are going to win today.
Excellent.
So, Natalie, I'm so glad that you're able to be here today and to help me out with this because I'm trying to get Christmas gifts for the Words at Large team. And, of course, we're all about books.
Okay.
So, of course, I'm going to get them books. But I want to make it a little more special. And your book has inspired me to match up each book with a bottle of wine.
Oh, that's a fine idea.
So is it all right if I let you know what our team members' favorite books are?
Oh, sure.
You help me with the best.
Absolutely.
Nice bottle?
Yeah, let's match them up.
Okay, do people do this a lot to you? Do you know, people ask you for free advice often?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But it's usually of the kind matching food and wine, not books and wine.
Oh.
So this is an interesting challenge.
Okay.
I'm going to enjoy this.
Okay, great. Well, the first one is for Sharon Farrell, who's our host. Sharon loves the book Fall on Your Knees by Anne-Marie MacDonald, which I love as well.
Me too. So, I love that. I'm originally from Cape Breton.
Oh, really?
And so are my parents.
Great.
So I just love Anne-Marie MacDonald's sensibility in that. And so if I were being a purist, I'd choose Glenbretton Rare, which is actually a whiskey that's from Glenora Distillery in Cape Breton. But since this is wine and we're talking wine, I'll get something a little bit more with the subject. And so I'd suggest something Canadian to celebrate, I think, one of our best writers. And I'd go with a Vineland Estates semi-dry, meaning just a touch of sweetness, Riesling. So it has this lovely combination of the sweetness and the acidity. I think it's right in tune with Anne-Marie's writing. So she has these bittersweet memories that have a real zing along the backbone. And so if you were drinking this Vineland Estates Riesling, I think it would just be so in harmony with her own prose.
Beautiful. The next book is for Kimberly Walsh. She's our web goddess. She's out in Halifax. And the book that I'm getting for her is Memoirs of a Geisha by Arthur Golden.
Okay, yes. Well, I'm a big believer in regional matching. So when I look at food and wine, I will often recommend food and wine that comes from the same place. So if you think of Italian Chianti and pasta with tomato sauce, beautiful combination because they come from the same place. So if we're talking about this book, Memoirs of a Geisha, I would go with Japanese sake. So that's fermented rice wine made in Japan. It is actually not as potent as a lot of people think. It doesn't have high alcohol, so it's a lovely wine to sip on, but I just think it'd be so neat to be reading about the story that takes place there while you're drinking something that is very traditional for that culture.
And sake is drunk warm?
Yeah, it's heated and it's often served in little wooden boxes. It's beautiful. It's actually very fragrant, very floral, very delicate. Sometimes we have the image of it as being like a hard spirit, but it's not. It's a very delicate wine.
Oh, great.
Much like a geisha.
Our executive producer, James, loves books about war.
Ah.
And I'm thinking Tolstoy's War and Peace.
Hmm.
What would go? It's a pretty heavy book. It's pretty dramatic.
Yes.
What do you suggest?
Well, you need to be well fortified to read War and Peace.
True enough.
Absolutely. Because it could take years, actually, to finish that book. So,
oh, no, I have to get him a case?
No, actually, if you just get him port, a fortified wine, it lasts for years.
Excellent.
It's one of the longest keeping wines. So you could be reading this book, you know, 5, 10, 20 years from now, and your port will still hold up. So you can either go vintage port, which means it has a date on it, a year, or you can go tawny port. I think either or would go with War and Peace. As I say, they'll weather many years. They're classic. They're also one of the earliest wines that were consumed hundreds and hundreds of years ago because they kept on the journey in the ship, in the bow of the ship. So the ship could be tossing and turning, the temperature could turn hot and cold, the port held up. Mm-hmm. And so that is the kind of wine you need, as I say, to fortify yourself for war and peace.
For myself, since I'm getting books for everyone else, the book that I really enjoy reading is The Unbearable Lightness of Being. What bottle would you recommend for that book?
Well, I loved that book and the movie, too, mm-hmm. actually. And I love that contradiction of phrases, the unbearable lightness. It just brings, to me, the image of a German Riesling to mind. Uh-huh. Maybe not everyone gets those kinds of images when they think of unbearable lightness, but I do, because German Riesling is so concentrated, so many flavors, just packed. And yet, the alcohol level in it is usually only 8 to 10%. So you can sip this throughout an evening, and mm-hmm. you won't feel as though you've been clobbered with too much alcohol by the time you're finished. So you can actually get through the whole book without, you know, going to sleep because you've had too much wine. And really, I think, get a lot of enjoyment from a German Riesling. We often pass them up in the stores. And I think it's much like this book. Unless you know about it, it's a real gem. And it's a discovery that people make when mm-hmm. they get into German Riesling. They go, wow, I never knew this existed. Partly because the labels are so difficult to read. But it's like discovering, you know, a favorite book. Mm-hmm. So I think they make a perfect match.
Excellent.
Yeah.
You brought up film. And the next book I wanted to ask you about is The Devil Wears Prada by Lauren Weisberger.
Right. That's a great movie. Eh? Don't you love Meryl Streep in that? Well, the thing I think about with this movie is a cult Cabernet from California. Uh-huh. And when I say cult, I mean rare, sought after, and very, very expensive, like Prada.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, exactly. So if you think of, there's some big names like Dominus, Screaming Eagle, Colgan, Bruce Family. They're hard to get, but people drink them like badges almost. They're delicious wines, but they can cost $100, $200, $300 a bottle or more. So I think those would be just perfect to drink while you're reading or watching the movie that features Prada in it.
Yeah. Going back to a classic now, Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte, one of my mother's favorite books, and I might be getting it for her. So what would you recommend?
Well, when I think of Wuthering Heights, I think of Heathcliff, a dark, brooding, muscular, robust wine like an Australian Shiraz or a Chilean Cabernet. I think those would be perfect wines. You could even drink them on the moor.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Yeah.
So I'm going to add at the cost of an airline flight to England.
Yes,
to the ticket.
Absolutely, for the full experience. Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. So what about you? What's your favorite book and wine combo?
I've read a lot of wine and food books, actually. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorites is by M.F.K. Fisher. She's written a lot. She was a famous, famous food writer back in the 40s and 50s from America, and I just loved her sensibility. She was very sensuous. She was very descriptive. She was very personal when she wrote, and she almost used food as an excuse to talk about the people in her life or the people she met, much like A.J. Liebling with food, mm-hmm. Another great, great writer. And so with M.F.K. Fisher, The Art of Eating is probably her classic book, or The Gastronomical Me. With A.J. Liebling, Between Bites, or Between Meals, I should say, both of those I'd recommend. And mm-hmm. their books make me thirsty and hungry for just about everything. So I would choose a favorite wine, like a Pinot Noir, from the Okanagan or mm-hmm. Niagara. I also love Pinot from New Zealand.
What was it that made you decide, this is it? What was the glass of wine that you were drinking, or what would happen to make you decide you wanted to be a wine writer?
Well, I sort of backed into it like a lot of things in my life. I remember the first good glass of wine I had. It didn't make the connection immediately for me to be a writer, but it certainly lit the fire for me that, hey, there's something going on in this glass, and I have to find out more about it. My husband and I were at a restaurant here in Toronto, and we were young. We had just graduated from university, so we finally had some money. And so we were dining out at this small restaurant. The waiter came over and said, would you like to try the Brunello? And we said, sure, thinking it was a regional Italian dish. Well, it turns out it was a red wine from central Italy. And so we were just relieved not to have to tackle the restaurant wine list. We didn't know a lot. And so he brought the bottle and poured it. And I remember just raising the glass up to my lips, and the smells just rushed out to meet me. It was one of the most wonderful things. I knew how I felt, and I just didn't know how to describe it. Mm-hmm. But I knew there was something special, and I wanted to learn more. And more than anything, I wanted to find the words to describe what I was smelling, feeling, tasting.
Yes, writing about wine is a particular skill. It's almost like you have to be a poet. Can you tell me about learning to write about wine?
Sure. Well, you know, it's wine writing is also often accused of being purple prose because it can be over the top. You know, when I hear words like robust and tight and rakish, that sort of thing, I wonder, you know, are they talking about wine or Brad Pitt? And then, you know, so you can get the fruit salad school of, oh, there's plums and raspberries and, you know, gooseberries and so on. And I think a lot of people find it hard to relate to that kind of description. Mm-hmm. I know I do. And so I think writing about wine can be very sensuous, and it should make you thirsty, really, in the end. That's what good wine writing does. But over time, I think I've learned kind of how to describe wine in what I think are more concrete terms and words that people can relate to. In the end, too, it's about the pleasure we experience from it. It's not just about analyzing all of these aromas and getting it right, because mm-hmm. tasting is so subjective. But it's, you know, what is the experience that is going on for you while you're tasting this wine? Who are you with? What are you eating? What is the total environment and experience? And to me, that's what I like to write about.
And your book is a little different from other wine books.
It is. I took the approach of telling stories. So there are a lot of useful books in the stores these days, vintage guides, encyclopedias, and so on, and they definitely have a place in a wine library. But what I wanted to do was tell stories. So I sought out the most passionate, obsessed, colorful people I could find in the wine industry, and there are a lot of them. In telling their stories, I told the story of wine. So, for example, instead of telling you how wine is made and about fermentation science, and you might be asleep by page 6, I think, I tried to find the nuttiest, most provocative, colorful winemaker I could find, and it turned out he was in California. His name is Randall Graham from Bonnie Doon Vineyards, and I wanted to do more than just interview him. I asked if I could work the harvest with him. So I went down there in September. I was picking grapes. I was back at the winery.
Wow.
Yeah, and able to say what it's really like. I think it was a richer, more profound experience. I sort of tried to become one with my subject, like a human grape, completely crushed and sticky. So,
but tasty.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought not only would I get more out of the experience, but I think the reader gets more from it. You still learn about how wine's made, but I hope you're almost not noticing that because you're rolling along with the story. It's kind of like when I was little, my mother would put the peas in the mashed potatoes. Tasted good, but it got the nutrition.
Well, I remember one of the stories that struck me in your book is when you talk about sending a bottle back.
Oh, yes.
In a restaurant.
Yeah.
Because that is a very intimidating experience.
It is.
I have never dared to do such a thing.
And most people don't, you know. They estimate that at least 5 to 10% of wines have faults. And of all the sommeliers I surveyed, they said maybe 1 to 2% of bottles get sent back.
Mm-hmm.
So people are afraid to send bad bottles back, and they should. But you're right, there's a lot of social hang-ups about it. It's very intimidating. And I have this experience in France where I have a very intimidating sommelier who has poured me a bottle. I'm on my own because I'm working. I'm going through Bordeaux, the vineyards, and I'm feeling kind of sorry for myself because I'm celebrating my birthday on the road.
Oh.
So that's okay. I make up for things in life with wine. So I ordered a really expensive half bottle of wine. It was like $250.
Wow.
But, you know, I was celebrating. So, and there was a lot of pity going on. So anyway, but he brought it and it was corked, meaning it smelled and tasted like cardboard, wet cardboard box, which is a fault. I was so intimidated alone in France, very snooty sommelier,
mm-hmm.
and I just said, oh, I guess it's okay. And here I had been writing about wine for 6-7 years. And so I can just imagine what other people feel. Anyway, this continued, and I consumed a whole glass of it before I got up the courage and, well, the anger, too. Here I was drinking a $250 bottle of cardboard, liquid cardboard. And so finally, I sent it back, but it was quite traumatic. And, you know, it developed a lot of empathy in me for other people who are faced with this situation.
What's your impression of just Canadians and their approach to wine? Because we're looked at more as a beer-drinking nation, I would think, in international scene. What is your impression of Canadians?
Well, you know, I grew up in a good Scottish family from Cape Breton, and so was beer and whiskey on the table. And I think that's the experience for many of us, unless we had a European background, French, Italian, Spanish, and so on. So we're a young wine culture in this country. We're young in terms of our consumption and appreciation, but also our own wine industry and making wine. And those aspects all go hand in hand. So our industries now, our winemaking industry has matured a great deal. We make great wines, especially in Niagara and the Okanagan. And I think as a result of that and people traveling and getting a more cosmopolitan view of food and wine internationally, we've developed a real thirst and appreciation for wine. And you can see it in various things, like for the first time, Gallup said last year, more people preferred wine over beer as their alcoholic beverage. Yes. Statistics Canada said wine grew 6.5%, whereas beer grew 3.3%. More people are taking courses, making wine country their vacation, reading books,
yay.
Watching movies like Sideways, or there's a new one out with Russell Crowe, A Good Year. So it's becoming more of a mainstream drink, something that we have with dinner or just enjoy, rather than this elitist beverage that is only for connoisseurs. And I think that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. And you have on your website, I believe, a way for the average drinker to have an informal drinking party.
Yes.
Perhaps at a book club meeting.
Exactly. Drinking party, tasting party, whatever you want to call it. I've posted tips on my website, which is just nataliemclean.com. It takes people through the steps in organizing a wine tasting with friends, and it's not difficult. So you buy the wines that are in your price range, you get the, you know, some glasses, and it can be quite fun for a book club or a wine tasting group or just friends getting together. And you don't have to analyze the wines, you don't have to make notes or take it really seriously. Something that's easier to organize than, say, a dinner party. So you could have some cheeses or some nibbles out, and I think you could have a lot of fun with it.
Well, I think it's a great idea. Okay. We'll make sure to post your book and wine recommendations on our website.
Oh, great.
And for more on Natalie and her musings on wine, and to sign up for your free email newsletter that gives information on how to match wine with food and how to get good value in the wine store, visit her website at www.nataliemclean.com. And Natalie, one last question that I think will probably come up now, this being the holiday season. What's the best way of getting a wine stain out of the carpet?
That's so practical.
Well, it's bound to happen at more than one party this season.
That would have been a good cover for my book. Because it is red, white, and drunk a little bit. You know, it sounds like I was staining the carpet everywhere. But there are products on the market. You can go to the liquor store or a wine accessory shop. It's called Wine Away. So two words, Wine Away. And there are other products that are like it. You spray it, and then usually most of the stain will come up. We're usually dealing with red wine on white carpets or clothes. Yes, I know. There's other tricks, though. You can put a lot of salt on the stain, especially if you can do it quickly. Mm-hmm. Leave it, and then it will absorb a lot of the stain out. I've heard of soda being used. It's probably the same principle. But I do like the spray that you can get, because it's chemically made to do that. And it's always, I always have a can. It's right beside the fire extinguisher in my house. So, you know, it's a good one to have at this time of the year. Yeah, lovely gift.
In addition to the wine, in addition to the book.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Natalie.
Oh, thanks, Rosie.
Rosie, there's nothing wrong with the lights.
Oh, that's Sharon. Natalie, will you stay for a party? It's going to be starting shortly.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Excellent.
I'll bring the wine.
Excellent. Thank you, Natalie.
Okay, thanks.